What's up, everyone? And welcome back to episode 5 already. Almost, you're getting up there, Roach.
Almost there to 10.
So up first, we got a couple of comments that we're going to take off. Do you want to start it off?
All right, fine. The first one that we're looking at is from Andy Turbo, and thanks for the donation, by the way. Another awesome episode of Darknet Discussion, Sam and Roach. Can't wait for the next one. Roach, I live in Australia, Melbourne, and I'm happy to post you a wallaby. I will have to brainstorm a good decoy. And I was thinking about that this week. After I saw that, I was just like thinking about getting matching like red Michael Jackson jackets, taking it to the dog park and like acting all cool with the wallaby.
Yeah, the stealth on that would be really interesting to see, I think. And yeah, definitely. Thank you, Andy, very much for supporting the channel, man. I've been seeing you been there supporting the channel a lot, and I definitely appreciate that. All of that goes to production, so that's awesome. We really, really appreciate that.
I was also browsing the Reddit hacking sub, and I saw him on there too, and he was giving us props on there, so thanks for that too.
Nice. Thank you, man. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So the next one, I think we got from Dave72445. He said he's talking about the guy from Defense Distributed. The way that I heard it, the Defense Distributed guy basically went on a dating site for like rich dudes that didn't want to pay for a girlfriend, bought some clothes, shoes, and paid for university, took him on holiday. The dating site checked identification on the site, but they didn't check it properly, so he thought he was talking to an 18, 19, but she was not 16. And with the deal where he basically didn't really have to do anything and there was no sex offender record. So that's like the South Park Mexican thing. Like he was at a strip club and he thought he was of age, but there wasn't. I don't know.
Yes. So I looked into this a little bit, and both you and Dave kind of had some truth mixed in there. From what I was able to tell, so first off, like the guy's full name from Defense Distributed is Cody Wilson, and Defense Distributed is basically like this company that had created 3D printed guns that you could download and print out, which I think is unbelievably awesome and empowering. But he ended up being arrested. The actual, like when they arrested him, the charge, from my understanding, was like sexual assault of a 16-year-old girl. And he ended up pleading guilty to injuring a child. Like that was the guilty plea that he made. And he got like sentenced to like 7 years of probation. It said, now the confusing thing was it said that he has to register as a sex offender. And maybe Dave can clarify this. So I saw that the incident was at the Archer Hotel in Austin, and that he had paid the victim supposedly $500. Because again, like all the information that we get is from the cops, so who actually knows really what the truth is? But
and they're crooked in Austin too, by the way.
Yeah, and he also had to pay $4,800 in restitution and do 475 hours of community service. But I'm definitely not one for sex offenses, so I'm probably a bad person to ask about this. But I do have a natural distrust for the judicial system, which I think is a healthy distrust, which I'll get into in a little bit. So he apparently he did plead guilty to like injuring a child, leave him like 7 years probation. But I looked him up in Texas, because that's where he caught the charge, so that's where like the disposition should have been. And I looked up to see if he was, because they have a sex offender registry in Texas, and I plugged his name in and I didn't find anything. And then on top of that, I went and I looked it up federally to see if like there was somewhere else, and I searched, man, I didn't find anything. I found a bunch of other weirdos that were named Cody Wilson, but I wasn't actually able to find him. So I think I'd really like to know like what the deal is with that. I didn't have much time aside from that to really get into it. And he's right about the whole site thing. It was like sugardaddymeat.com or some weirdo crap like that.
You don't think you would have been able to look at her and suss out that she was out of age?
I mean, you never know. I don't know. Now, if we're in county, I don't care.
Right.
If we're in, because that's the story every guy has in county. Like, she told me she was this age and she was actually this. Like, that's something that's been said so many times. It's ridiculous. So, like, a lot of times in a lot of counties, when dudes come in and they say that, you just, they're instantly checked. Right up top or whatever, like, and like in some places, man, that option doesn't even exist, where it's like, hey, you need to roll it up and bounce. Sometimes they just get smashed.
Or do you think that because he was doing like those, he was putting up the Liberator and all that, that they were all, the government wasn't happy with it, so they found quote unquote seamless computer that they probably planted?
I didn't hear about the CP.
Or what I'm talking about, like fabricated charges.
Yeah, anything's possible with them. Because of who he was, and they really hated him. I would tend to give him a lot more credibility than I would give the average dude coming in that's just saying, hey man, she said she was this age and she was this age and I didn't know. And again, like I said, like when you in feds or county, like typically when that discussion happens, there's very standard responses that sex offenders will give back. And like, one of them would be like, oh, like what's your case about? They'd be like, oh, stuff, or like, oh, I don't want to get into it. Or like stuff, like very light brush offs that, because a lot of them are not dominant. They're not like, hey man, don't ask me, like they don't really have those kind of reactions,
right?
Because they're just weirdo predator types. So you tend to get like these kind of off-brand responses with them. But with that said, man, I don't know, because with this dude, like he actually had serious adversaries, and like people would be like, well, it's the federal government, like what are they going to do? And like, we have another comment from Street Infamy, which I'm not going to jump to right now, but when we get to that, that's where I'm going to make that point, because I have a lot to say kind of about some of the stuff that was said there. But to get to what you were saying, Roach, like, it's possible, man. It's definitely, it's like the guy who, I don't know his name offhand, but there was a guy who was creating a movie called Gray State, G-R-A-Y.
Right.
The whole premise of the movie was basically that the United States is going to end up in martial law, and it's going to become a totalitarian state, and everyone's going to have to take this RFID chip, kind of like the mark of the beast. And like the one of the things we saw in the trailer was like Department of Homeland Security and these FEMA federal agencies rolling in, first just quelling protests, then snatching people, then executing people. The government's a fearful servant and dangerous masters. And what happened was, this guy made this movie, or he was producing the movie, and he had raised money to be able to make the movie. And he released a trailer on YouTube, and the trailer for the movie called Gray State is on YouTube. It's a great trailer. I was so amped when it came out. I was psyched about being able to watch it. And he was like, he seemed like a really stable dude with a great family. And then all of a sudden, like, supposedly he killed his wife, killed his daughter, and killed himself.
Oh, the classic, like, dead bodies, sprinkled some crack on him and must leave.
Yeah, like, straight, like, from Biggie Smalls. But except there's no drugs. So they're just like, oh, like, he was just really disturbed. And, like, all his neighbors, like, that you saw interviewed were like, oh, he was really stable. He was always, he's a happy guy. Like, there was that impression of him, like, wasn't something that a lot of people thought was actually the case, which could be argued. That's always the case with people when things happen like that. A lot of them have the ability to hide it, but it was just, yeah, I mean, it's tragic, but it's really sad that we tend to see a lot of the times the people who tell the truth in society are actually the ones who are persecuted or prosecuted. Which definitely sucks. I mean, if we're talking a lot like in a biblical sense, it's like Jesus Christ, right?
Right.
Or like we have like Galileo, and he's like, the earth isn't the center of the universe. And people are like, oh, he's a throw him in prison. And you just kind of, that's just kind of the norm of our world. It's like, yeah, we tend to, the majority tends to try to X out that person who's telling the truth in society.
Right. It's been doing like that since the beginning of time, almost.
Yeah.
I've got to silence somebody.
Yeah. So, I mean, but moving on to the Street Infamies one. So I'll read this one. I have a pretty, a pretty Sam-ish response.
Yeah, this one's for you. Don't totally.
It's kind of long-winded, but so Street Infamy says the federal rules of evidence are at times much lower for probable cause due process, diligence, and discretion gets tricky in law. That's why it's practice and never perfected. Yo, in Dallas, someone defended themselves from a vehicle that was stalking them and chasing them around. Turns out an undercover law enforcement element was shot because he was dressed in plain clothes in an unmarked car. He was antagonizing a civilian. Again, law is tricky because vehicles can be used as weapons. And if clearly on digital media, there is evidence that the person who is discharging the firearm fell in danger after trying to evade the confrontation, how could a jury of people truly beyond a reasonable doubt prove intent of shooting an officer? But it's completely legal to charge someone willy-nilly at the highest levels for the smallest offense. It's a tricky thing. It is. I agree with a lot of Street Infamy's state. But that said, I have other, I think, viewpoints on it. I think we both agree probable cause standards are definitely often too low. And like, that's a really bad hit because that leads to things like wrongful searches, arrests, and violations of the Fourth Amendment and abuse, basically, by law enforcement. And that abuse being made to be something that's fairly common, which is a really bad hit. Like when you have probable cause standards that are too low, it ends up really doing a lot of damage in society as a whole. Since 1989, you have 2,300 exonerations, which is like when they said, hey, this person did this, they were convicted, and then it was proven later on that they didn't do it.
Right.
And 40% of wrongful convictions involve some kind of official misconduct. And that's like a cop lying, or an example was a guy named Richard Jewell in 1996. He was falsely accused of a bombing in Atlanta.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And the FBI leaked this dude's name to the media. And like no real evidence actually linked him to the crime. The reason I would look at it like a little bit different would be like the quote of, what do you say, practice and never perfected. I think it really reflects the systemic incompetence of the system. Like it's as a whole, like the incompetence of the system is really exacerbated with a statement like that. I think it offers kind of an excuse for the failures of the legal system. A system that's led to a good amount of unjust outcomes, misconduct with FBI agents. And another case with that would be like Ted Stevens, which was in 2008, where the FBI had exculpatory evidence or like evidence that showed this guy didn't do something and they just didn't share it. And the lead agent was actually involved in this kind of misconduct, and this guy was convicted, and then later on, he ended up being exonerated. And another case, which probably almost everyone knows about, is Whitey Bulger, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And in 2011, the FBI agents were like protecting him, and he was actively like committing crimes, and they knew he was committing crimes. Like this wasn't like some unknown thing. Like they knew he was committing crimes. And they let him do this stuff. And there were agents that were actually on the take that were getting paid by this guy so that he could do this. And like another example would be the ATF's Operation Fast and the Furious, which ran from like 06 to 2012. I don't know, 2012. 2006 to like 2012. Or no, maybe it's 2011. They just allowed the sale of guns and to the Mexican cartels, and guns ended up killing. I guess there's a Border Patrol agent who actually died because of this. And then, of course, like we have older examples.
That Larry Nassar guy in the FBI with the United States gymnast, they were covering all that up.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, he got stabbed. It was awesome.
But yeah, the feds were covering that up.
Yep. Yeah, he gets stabbed in the feds.
or like that thing I sent you this morning where that judge and that young thug trial, him and the judge and the prosecutor like pressed it on some witness that's sworn in to testify, and they did it without the other side. And that whole thing's a wild. That just goes to show that what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, ATF, the DEA too, man. Like the DT, that like a lot of people don't know that the DEA, man, in 2015 was actually having like wild orgy parties that were funded by the drug cartel. Like DEA agents were accepting bribes. Like the parties were in Colombia, they were paid for by the cartel. And all the agents that actually got popped got like super light punishments. It was just like ridiculous. And
I was about to say, how are they at like a U.S. drug agency, but they're operating overseas?
Yeah, because they just do what they want. That's pretty much it. They just do what they want. It's absolutely crazy. They can do whatever they want, but if it's like the federal government can lose trillions of dollars, right? Like the Pentagon can lose $3 trillion, then they can lose another billion. They literally just like, where this money go? Oh, we don't know. But it's like, if you go over $600 in Cash App, like we're coming for you. Like,
right. But,
it's absolutely insane what happens when the people who are making the laws and in some cases enforcing the laws become more criminal than the criminals themselves. But then like there's another money laundering operation in 2012. The DEA laundered millions of dollars for the cartel and failed to actually track the funds that they laundered. And there was absolutely no cartel arrests that were actually made. Or if we look at the illegal surveillance and constitutional violations that happened with the NSA and that Snowden revealed, like 2013, widespread phone and internet collection of data and violated privacy rights of millions. And just, hey, man, it's all good. Don't worry about it. Big brother's watching. Like, I think Ornwell would absolutely roll over in his grave if he knew how light his prediction actually would be. But yeah, then we have, you even go back to the 50s, man, with COINTELPRO, where the FBI had covert operations against activists.
Leftist,
you know, and surveillance of like civil rights leaders and unauthorized spying and harassment. Like, then we switch up. Okay, let's switch up from the FBI and look at the CIA with MKUltra going from the 50s to the 70s. And they're just giving people LSD and you're like, oh, yeah, but they don't do that anymore. Like, oh, yeah, yeah. Now it's some other horrific project with a totally different name that we won't know about for 40 years or so. It's absolutely crazy the amount of stuff that they actually get away with. And then to kind of hit back on the court failures and like wrongful convictions, you got like the Central Park Five in 89, which is five teenage kids who were falsely accused of sexually assaulting a woman in a park. And they were basically coerced into giving these confessions when there was no physical evidence. They ended up serving crazy amount, I don't know offhand, but a crazy amount of time in prison with rape charges for that, and like they were totally innocent. So I mean, and it goes on and on. You got Cameron Todd, 92, who they said was an arsonist, and forensic evidence later figured out that he actually wasn't, and he is completely innocent. And but there's we've seen like coerced confessions, and we've seen like all these kind of things. And that's kind of like that was my whole point. I mean, and even like if you're mentally handicapped, even though like even if you're mentally handicapped, like that doesn't even stop them. Like, there's a kid named Brendan Dorsey, I think his name was, or he's Dassey.
Is it from that one show on the Netflix? Where he was like,
I don't know,
sub IQ and stuff. And like,
it was in like the mid 2000s.
Was it somewhere in Ohio? Somewhere around there. That's Stephen Avery.
He was intellectually disabled and he was manipulated by the cops and like he was convicted. And like the conviction was like widely criticized, but didn't do anything, you know. And then did Juan Rivera in 92, who was basically interrogated for 4 days and confessed at that point. And then like later on, DNA evidence proved that he was innocent and he was released after 20 years in prison. It's absolutely crazy. Like 27%.
It just goes on and on and on.
Yeah, I mean, we could sit here and list these all day. But it's like 27% of the exonerations involve some type of false confession that was extracted. That's like a quarter of them. And then another quarter, or like 21% or 20%, involved perjury or false accusations of some kind. So, but that's why, like, I do have some hesitation when we talk about cases where it's like, if it's a he said, she said thing, and there's no like if there's not concrete evidence, I like to defer with science,
right?
Basically. But aside from that, even when we have like, let's say, okay, well, let's Sam, like you picked like all these ones where it's like corrupt feds and whatnot, but like, there's got to be instances where that's just not the case. And like for me, and again, this goes back to the whole thing of practice and ever perfected. If you're a medical professional, you're going to take someone's kidney out. If you're going to take my kidney out, I'm going to make damn sure that this isn't your first time doing surgery.
Right. You don't leave like the towel inside.
Yeah, dude, like you're not, like, I don't want you practicing on me, like you risking my life because you don't know what you're doing. And that's kind of the point I'm making with all of this, is that if it is just if it's practice, then when do you do practices? Typically, you do practices with games. And if that's what this is, and it's a game, and there's a pretty solid argument for the fact that a lot of people consider it that, considering the fact that, like, when you play tennis, what do you play tennis on? Play tennis on the court. When you go to trial, where do you go? You go to court, right? When you look at a tennis match, who is it that's up on this bench? It's the judge. And we have the same thing in the legal system. And in court, it's a lot like tennis, where you have the prosecution and the defense, and the ball goes back and forth between the two, and you have a judge on a bench who rules essentially for the banks. Because at the end of the day, like, what happens is that individual, whether it's a civil or criminal case, that person's going to pay something, right? Whether it's like time with their life, it's going to be time. And if it's time, then they're going to be forced to work, or they're going to be in solitary. And if it's not that, then it's going to be fines and fees that are levied against them, which is insane, especially when we look at the fact that a lot of times the restitution that's issued by courts doesn't actually, like, in cases where there's no victim, it doesn't go to the victim because there is no victim. So that's nuts. But we also have cases that we can point at where, like, the charges are just, like, way excessive or ridiculous. So a great example is the three strikes and you're out.
California law, right?
No, there's like 20-something states that have this law. And actually, to be honest, California isn't the worst out of those states, but we'll get to that too. For like ridiculous sentences, though, relating to like the form of legislation that governs whether or not you do a life sentence based on baseball. Like, what kind of moron thought of this legislation? Like, we're gonna decide whether or not you go to prison for the rest of your life or for 25 years. Based off of a game. And again, that's why I said it, like, goes back to the whole thing, it being a big hoax, a big game, where it doesn't matter who wins, because at the end of the day, someone's going to pay. If the defense wins, than the people. The taxpayers paid to have this trial.
Okay.
And if the United States or the prosecution wins, or the whoever's the local district attorney wins, then that person's going to be paying with their life, right? Or they're going to be paying with years in prison, whatever. So, like, but an example of some of the ridiculous sentences would be like Leonardo Adri in 1995. He was sentenced to life for stealing $153 worth of videotapes.
Wow. That's insane.
And he appealed, right? And as would any of us, you're like, dude, I got a life for stealing $153 worth of videotapes. So he appealed. And the Supreme Court upheld the verdict. It's just absolute insane. No victim. And then Gregory Taylor, this is in 1997. Gregory was sentenced to 25 years to life for stealing a wallet. And like, he had prior felonies, but they were nonviolent convictions.
Right.
And then like Gary Ewing in 2000 was sentenced to 25 years to life for stealing golf clubs. And he had previous felonies, but again, none of them were violent. So, I mean, it's just, it's absolutely like that's in my opinion, it's completely over the top and absolutely insane. It's disproportionate sentences for minor crimes. And I think it causes a significant burden financially for the prison system, which we all as taxpayers pay for. And there's little to no deterrent at the end of the day. Sentencing people to life is not a deterrent.
Right.
Just like if you say, how insane would it be to put up no guns allowed in this, like, you know, how many school shooters have walked up to a school, seen a no guns allowed sign and been like, oh, and I can't shoot this school up. The sign tells me, like, that's not realistic. It's idiotic and it's laughable. And life sentences for nonviolent offenders end up costing taxpayers millions and millions of dollars. So my point earlier when you were asking about, like, you're like, oh, in California, there are states, and don't quote me on this, but from my understanding, there are other states like Indiana, Louisiana, North Carolina, that also have a three strikes and you're out policy, but those aren't 25 years. They're mandatory life in prison without parole.
Yeah, North Carolina is a little harsh. I know that. I remember I grew up that state, and I remember the governor taking away all the art classes and stuff. It's just very draconian over there. So yeah. I could see why they would have a three strike law.
One thing I never really see is, like, you can decide how you want to live based on the state that you're in. Like, I know a ton of people who are like, they're born in a state, and not that they never leave that state, but like they never move out of that state. That's because like they got family there, their roots are there. Totally understandable. But like what's interesting about America is like you can literally, like if you're in a state you don't like, you can pick up and move and go to a state that's more in line with like your political or philosophical, or, like just your general ideologies, which I think is probably one of the coolest things about this country is how diverse it is. Because there's definitely people who are all for that. They're like, hey, man, like, I like the three strikes and you're out policy. I think all criminals, even if they did steal a wallet, should get life. And it's like, okay, man, like, that's good. That's cool. Hopefully you're not one of those people who get coerced into a confession, or the cops just plant evidence on you. Because on average, from my understanding, there's about 100,000 people that are actually innocent that are incarcerated, like as a ballpark number, which in retrospect is actually rather bad considering that it's like 2.2 million or 2.3 million people that are currently incarcerated. That was the last statistic I saw of that. And
yeah, we don't like really need much except for like incarcerating our own, and people yeah. will believe angels exist.
I mean, we're also number one in obesity, divorce, like heart disease. Like we have a lot of number ones in bad, unfortunately, bad categories. And I think that's just because of us being led astray in many different ways. That's a whole nother topic. I still think that this country by and large is absolutely one of the best countries that exists right now or has ever existed, despite all the bad that exists, because we do have some of the most amazing people that I've ever come across. Some of the most insightful, like inventors, philosophers, really, really incredible individuals that have contributed a lot, not just to America, but to the world as a whole. That's because, like, we're not making it illegal to have inventions, and there's certain liberties that we do still have in this country, which is awesome. But anyways, I'm gonna shift focus because, like, I've been
we don't want to get into the politics because we made the mistake last time.
Well, there's that, but like, I've also been kind of just hammering on the criminal justice system, and so we had seen a tweet that actually was really awesome to see. Do you want to break that down?
Oh yeah, so that was the first thing I saw this morning. A big person on Twitter that I follow gave us a shout out, VXDB on Twitter, and they were saying that if you like podcasts. They threw us in there with Dark Knight Diaries Pack podcast, which I haven't heard, but I'm going to. I'm going to check them out. Which was cool. I mean, we got a whole, our whole thing's a lot different than Dark Knight Diaries, but that's nice to be thrown up in there and getting some recognition. And we're getting listened to all over the world, which is wild. I mean, like, even we got Canada now. Remember last week, there was like, we don't have no Canada people. Got Canada now.
Yeah, VXDB is awesome. I go back and forth with him, her, or whatever on a semi kind of regular basis. We have a really a good flow back and forth, and they put out some great information. I've seen them break a couple different interesting stories. I think they were the ones. Weren't they also the ones who broke that Doxbin thing with the dude?
Yeah, that's where I saw it.
Getting kidnapped, not getting kidnapped, or whatever.
Yeah, that's where I saw it. That's where I caught that from. But that whole Doxton thing was also on Reddit and everything.
Yep.
So it was that whole thing was super wild. But we're gonna get into people getting kidnapped later, I guess.
We would love to address all the comments that you guys leave, but we don't have that kind of that time to be able to do it because, like, having to edit these and all that later on, it's absolutely insane. But USMC 913 had said, love this episode, which I think this was the last episode. As usual, a few questions though. Can we get background on Roach that still protects his anonymity and OPSEC? Also, is there a XMR address for us to donate to the show?
Well, we don't got the XMR up yet because I'm still working on the LLC slowly, but I do got a contact page up. I did do that. So right now, until we can pay taxes on them, because I'm not trying to see the tax man on some bullshit.
Oh, yeah, tax evasion sucks, man. Like, they're gonna hit you with a good 7 to 20.
And they're going to be like, you're on this podcast talking about all this shit. You ain't paying your taxes. I'm like, hell not. So I got to get all that set up. And then when we do, we're going to have all the donation stuff. But right now I got the contact. I just threw the Jabber. I took the last week off. So, like, I haven't been updating the website, and I got somebody that's going to be helping me with the writing, my friend Malwart. But yeah. So right now, until we get the LLC up, like, we can take it off of YouTube, but that's through Sam. He has all that stuff like set up, but like as Darknet discussion, like right now, we're not able to take donations.
Yep.
But as far as the background, I guess we're going to do that. It's just, I got to dance around some stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll just fire them off at you, man. And if you want to answer them, go ahead and answer them. If you're not comfortable answering them, feel free not to. That's cool too.
I'm trying to make it to podcast 10 and 100.
So the first one I'd say is, what inspired you to get involved with the dark net to begin with? And when you answer that, like, what were your, like, initial thoughts about it when you, like, the day you first heard about the darknet? And, like, when you, after you heard about it, like, what is it that inspired you to actually get involved?
Well, I guess it was just, like, a natural progression. I was around the carding forums and stuff since I was 14, 15, 16. That's where I started. I started doing AIM punters and MSN booters and stuff. And then got into, like, sniffing Yahoo chats and then spamming the emails that I would collect off that. Going from there, so just, like, hanging on the forums of the early days, back when you didn't have to do all the hoops and stuff for carding. You could just get, like, a free proxy from China and then plug it in and just hit the card up. And I used to do dumb stuff. Yeah, I used to get, like, a box of brass knuckles, like, meat and, like, gift cards and stuff. But yeah, so it was just a natural progression. It started, then got into the malware scene, and then Bitcoin and stuff wasn't around back then. Everybody used to have to do things through e-gold exchanges. So, like, I would sell somebody, like, a DB of some sort, and a box, then it'd be done through the e-gold exchange, and, like, a box of money would show up to your drop. And I was, like, 16. So, like, as the evolution of the hacking and Black Hawk culture went, I went along with it, gaining skills. So that's how I got in. It was just that natural. I was like, oh, they're doing drug markets now.
Yep.
And I don't even do drugs, but I was just like, oh, bet you I can hit these guys up and the cops ain't going to give a shit if I'm taking money off them. That's how kind of when I came in.
So how is being involved with the, like, the dark net or, like, the drug market? So there's, like, forums actually shaped, like, your personality and, like, or, like, your identity and your worldview. So, like, the micro being, like, you personally, and, like, the macro being, like, your view of the world.
Especially when you're doing a lot of, like, fraud stuff, and then this is before I got into malware and all that. You start learning about the banking structures because you're trying to get past, trying to beat them, right? Like, you learn about loans and all this crazy stuff. And then the more you learn about it, you understand that even though I'm doing this and it's wrong, half the stuff that these guys are doing are pretty fucked up too, with, like, the crazy interest rates that are, like, damn near predatory. So it skewed things. I don't know. I think also I used to read a lot. I don't want to talk about politics, but I used to read a lot of, like, Bakunin, Marx, and, like, Rosa Luxemburg and stuff like that. So it was pretty, since the banking system was always fucked up, I didn't need it. So I was just kind of like, it skewed it to the fact that it's just like, I just don't like them.
Yep.
Don't like bank. And I didn't feel bad at all taking anything from them.
Yep.
Because they're like our corporate overlords.
Yep.
And it was just starting to take off like that. So I think that's how it shaped it a little bit.
So do you have any, like, do you have personal, like, personal values or beliefs that drive you when doing stuff like that on the darknet?
Nah, it's just money, only money.
Sure.
And you have to have a goal. You can't move like, oh, I want money, but I also want to be, like, cool too. Like, no, it's either one or the other. So, like, everything for me is just money. Or was back then.
Could you, like, recall any, like, maybe if you generalize it, but, like, a specific or a significant challenge that you actually, like, faced on the darknet, and, like, one that maybe impacted you, like, personally, let's say?
I mean, I have tons. I mean, what I was most known for recently is, like, I got into it with an admin over something, and I used phishing as a creative way to try to bog down their market, and it would bog them down really bad. I'm trying to dance around the subject without, like, giving too much off.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to go into it if you don't want to. We can move on to another one if you want.
No, but some stuff is, like, there's a lot of politics and stuff that go on. So personal ethic and politics and some challenges and stuff. I dealt with like DDoS for like something for like 90 days on one of the sites.
Yep.
Or working as a back end guy and sometimes on some sites, some stuff. You always got to be moving the server. You always got to be moving, locking down middleware servers and making sure everything's all chill and stuff. It gave me like a work ethic, but like there's also problems. I could talk about Hugbunner would get a good laugh at this. I call it the great fake DB hack, but apparently he had DB. They said I was doing something. And then you get that out there, even though you can't confirm it, that causes problems, stress, and all kinds of stuff, like trying to get your thing out. I don't know. I'm trying to really dance around it without... Hopefully I'm doing good.
Yeah, you're good. Yeah. So I mean, the answer is yes. And it was kind of a complex situation. So now, aside from that, like that being involved, like on the darknet, have you seen that have any like influence, like significant influence on, and you don't have to be specific whether it was one or the other, but like your relationships with friends or family?
Nobody ever knew. I mean, I think I talked about it more on this podcast than I have with anybody else. That's like something you have to keep. That's something you go to the grave with.
Sure.
That you're making your life this way and look like you're going to work at this company and this, but you're actually, oh, your money's coming from over here.
Yep.
Yeah. You don't ever talk about it. You got to keep on your P's and Q's and keep your trap shut.
So what aspects?
Don't ever let it affect you in your outward.
So what specific aspects of your personality do you think make you suited for operating in that environment on the dark?
I think it's just experience.
Sure.
Just because, like I said, I've been doing this for a long time. I just naturally came up. Before there was drug markets, I was watching people get busted and friends of mine put on newspapers. Go back to the OG darknet market. The dark market, it was coded by that Max Vision. He used to call himself Iceman. That was like, I think the first dark market before, like it was like the precursor to him, I would say. I saw Shadow Crew and Albert Gonzalez hack the payment systems. I saw all that go on the when they had it and everything came out. So I've seen a lot of stuff. You can learn as you go on. Obviously when all that was going on, I was just a tadpole coming up, but I think that's what I said. It's just the time in the game and the experience made me better suited for some stuff down the line.
Sure. Yeah. So like, you going through and having like this, all these different stages of kind of growth, I guess, an evolution on the darknet. Did you have any like memorable, like maybe achievements or milestones that you reached through your activities on the darknet that you would be comfortable sharing?
I mean, nothing I could say like really publicly.
Okay. No, that's cool. Yep.
But I did get to work on a bunch of really, really cutting edge projects.
Yep.
Not only on around the dark market side, but also in the malware side and just other different types of sides. But yeah, I remember setting up Endgame the first time and helping Paris was helping us with it and hacking some sort of YAML code to extend the servers to 9. We were hacking the onion balance and just doing stuff like that.
Yep. So
malware stuff.
If we were to go back, right? Like we're to go back in time, and let's say we go back in time and for whatever reason, like we never have Tor, we never have I2P, we never have the concept of like this darknet, right? Darknet doesn't exist. How is your life today different with the absence of the darknet? Is it better? Is it worse? Like,
I don't know, because that's the thing. It's like, this is all I've actually known about. Sadly to say, it's like, oh, I didn't really know my adult life. So I don't know where it would be, but I don't think it would be anywhere good. So, like, I came up, like I said, I grew up in North Carolina, Vietnam, they called it. It was a rough town. And I just, sixth grade, I was expelled for stabbing somebody. So it's just like, I was already down that road, and computers kind of saved me in a way. So I wouldn't say jail. I would probably be in jail.
Yep. Yep.
Be in the feds, hopefully, like, not doing crazy life or something, but hypothetically.
Have you, like, had to, like, I think, like, make any personal sacrifices, basically, that you think you wouldn't have had to made if the dark net didn't exist?
Personal sacrifice? Not really. Sometimes you gotta loan your friends money and stuff, and I don't think it affected my relationships or anything around my personal life. But time, sacrificed a lot of time and labor working on stuff, especially different DDoS guards, or how can I be locked with a, like, say, a ransomware group or something? Like, how can I better get more locked? How can I make more money out of this? Just the time and the precision that you have to put into it. So yep. I would say I would have sacrificed a lot of my time. I could have been like in school or something, but there I was trying to get into something.
Long-term goals. I'm assuming, like, so for me, I'm still, like, I'm, even though I was busted, like, I'm still active on the dark net, but I don't do any criminality. I'm not going to ask you, and I don't want you to answer, if you still do any criminality, or because that's...
No, I'm long retired.
Okay.
I've been long retired. I wouldn't come on this podcast if I was even near it.
So, like, where do you want to be in like, maybe 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? Where do you see yourself? What are your long-term goals?
Well, I mean, like I said, it's like, that's all I knew from my adult life. So I'm like, I'm kind of rolling into this. I'm not a journalist by any sense of the word, but I'm trying to roll into something where, like, a darknet media, because I want to do cover, like the Pharaoh trial, go up there and cover stuff.
Yep.
Answer questions where I could never do it if I was back there.
Yeah, there's certainly a lack of the people that have hands-on experience in this sector, in the darknet, that actually cover things. So, like I said it before, like, the majority of the people who cover darknet related stuff are academics or, like, you know, cybersecurity researchers, which, I mean, nothing against academics or cybersecurity researchers, but, like, there's a big difference about hypothesizing or theorizing about operational security. There's a whole nother ball of wax that, like, if you're doing something and you get caught for this thing, you're going to go away for 5, 10, 20, maybe life.
Or watching the people around you. That's something. It's like, either they get busted, or that's what I was telling people, who are like, oh man, wait. What are you talking about? You always got to be ready to bust your gun and something. And I was telling you, over the time, man, I've seen people get busted. I've seen people get kidnapped. Like this guy I used to know on this old forum, used to talk with a lot, named Chow. He was a Turkish guy. hopefully you can put it on the thing. He kidnapped an informant in Turkey and tortured the living dog shit out of him.
Yep.
Or I was reading some SinSwiper got caught doing something on Telegram. They caught him, beat him, held for 200K. And then maybe this doc, that's the thing, the doxman guy thing, I mean, is probably a hoax, but it's happened for real.
Yeah, it happens. Happens on a regular basis in U.S. prisons. People get, farmants get obliterated, dude. I mean, like, even famous ones like Whitey Bulger, they're gouging his eyes out while he's alive. And then the other ones, man, you got them getting extorted for decades on end. So, yeah, absolutely. That is absolutely a reality of these kind of underworlds.
And you also got to learn that people come from different cultures, and sometimes that's also hard.
Yep.
I'd like, sorry to name drop again, but HB Hugbunner always tells me is the way that I talk, the way I come across was always so aggressive. And And that's just the way I am. I mean, obviously, friends now, talk to them when I can. But with also, if anybody was getting any tips, it's like, you got to be mindful of people. Not everybody's from your same culture. So you got to be work, especially when you're working with them and stuff on something, you got to be mindful that you can't be saying this and that. Or I don't know. That's something I also picked up, that you got to be culturally aware.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And like, I remember kind of seeing, I had seen something like that. I had a friend of mine who was telling me about, he, at one point, he was going to, it was back in the 80s, he was going to Walpole State Prison, and he had a 8 or a 10 year sentence that he was facing. And he had done time before, his experience with that. He was a convict, but sitting next to him was this younger kid who had never been to prison. And for those of you that don't know, like, Walpole in the 80s was basically a slaughterhouse. So there was about 500 dudes. And during that time, they would have sometimes 18 murders a year, which 18 murders among 500 guys is a lot. And that's not counting stabbings, assaults, beatings.
That's like Lorton. They shut down Lorton because three guards got stabbed, I think, in one day.
Yep. So, I mean, they shut down Walpole. They basically turned it into a transport hub. But there was this kid that was there who was talking about how he was married, and he's like, oh, like, I only have 5 years or 7 years, whatever he had. And like, you're talking about how his wife's going to wait for him. And like, my friend was laughing at him. He's like, dude, like, your wife's already like someone else's wife. Like, you better forget that. That's done with. And like, it's because of the divorce rate in prison.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
if you're getting 5 years, goodbye. Goodbye, everything.
So like, they get to Walpole and they're all sitting in the cell waiting. And like, Walpole was for a long period of time, it was one of the worst prisons to be in. It was just super violent. It was absolutely the worst in Mass. And it was like, if you got to Walpole, like, you got there, you didn't get there by accident. Like, you got there because you're super violent or you're super dangerous. You're like the most, the worst of the worst are there. So, like, this kid that was there, he committed a violent crime, but like, he wasn't like a super gangster or something. Like, maybe he was just like, the court just really wanted to make an example of him or whatever. So, like, he's stressing out, and he asked this guy next to him, how much time did you get, man? And the guy's like, oh, I got life. Like, I'm never getting out. And like, this kid's like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Oh, they told me I wasn't going to be in here with murderers. Like, and my friend like grabbed this kid and put him on the bench and was like, sit there and shut your mouth. Like, because at the end of the day, like, that dude, by that kid acting that way, shocked, which is his honest disposition, right? It wasn't like, it was like, that was just honestly how he felt. He was wearing his like emotions on his sleeve. But one thing he didn't understand is like, that's like, this dude that's telling him he has life, he's the one that actually has life. He has to do that life bid. And when someone's like, oh, I can't believe that's crazy, oh, and they're making a big deal about it, like, you're making it worse. You're rubbing salt in the wound for this poor bastard who just got life, came on the bus with you. He's never going to be with a woman again. It's just a massive blow. And then for someone, you know, and someone to do that who has what they would look at as like a baby bid, 7 year bid or whatever, it's just a really, it's almost a disrespectful thing to do to another person. But again, like, it goes back to that cultural thing where, like, if you don't understand that culture, there are so many different ways that you can get tripped up or, you know, get stabbed up or like if I, yeah. If we go in and like you've been in prison for a while and like me and you are in the same car and I'm like, oh, hey man, like, here's my paperwork and I show it to you. And you're like, okay, cool. Like, you see, I'm not a rat. I don't have any like bad charges. So you tell people like, oh, Sam's okay. And then like, maybe I meet someone else in our car and I'm like, oh, here's my paperwork. they're going to be like, oh, no. Roach already said you're good. And if I'm like, oh, yeah, but I want you to read it, then I'm basically saying that you aren't shit.
Right.
So, like, that's another thing, man. Like, and it's little stuff like that that can really, everyone's like, oh, gambling and drugs. Yeah, those are the obvious things. But there's a million little cultural things, like you were saying, that exist that can absolutely trip you up and really screw you up in the long run.
Yeah. And it can also, like, especially if you get on a team and you got some cutting edge something and they're all Russians, you got to know how to move with them. There's certain things you don't want to say, like even in just passing or just even different cultures. You just got to just keep it about the work, I say.
Yep.
I mean, that was interesting. I mean, this is just really weird to reflect on it, because sometimes, especially long career, people always ask me, it's like, oh, do you feel bad about some of this stuff? Like, yeah, dude. Like, I mean, shit. Like, I think one of the first things, like I was telling you, I had that sniffer. I'm going through Yahoo chat rooms, getting the emails, and fucking, I got a whole bunch of emails of like service dudes that, this is like 2004, that were like gay or whatever. And then I would like email them, like try to extort them, like, you gotta pay me, or I'm going to send this to your commanding officer or something, like doing crazy shit like that. When you're young, you don't have a moral compass like that. Now that I'm older, I'm like, fuck, man. I can't believe I was just like such a piece of shit. Especially with like just draining cards, 4 or 5 cards a day, just on whatever.
Yep.
Or like redirecting funds from a bank account to a mule, all kinds of weird shit. It's just, there's a reason why it's a thing that no one really wants to talk about it. But
yep.
The only thing I could probably say though is I never got caught doing anything in anything I've ever done, and people around me have never been caught in any which way we've all, and it's because we kept it tight.
Yeah, and that's one of the funny things that I see from a lot of people is, like, they'll see someone get busted, right? So, like, maybe, like, a threat actor, right, that takes down a bunch of sites or something, and they'd be like, oh, like, maybe this guy, like, total legend, and they're like, oh, the best hacker in the world got taken down. Or, like, you see the same thing with narcotics. They'd be like, oh, major, but all this guy who ran everything got taken down. And it's like, man, like, if we're talking about like hackers, for example, or threat actors, like the most dangerous ones are the ones you don't even know who they are, like, and you never will. Like they want to be ghosts. They're not. Their name's not really out there like that, or like they're doing stuff under alts. You know what I mean? Like I find some of the most dangerous people are the ones that constantly kind of stay with that anonymity cloak.
Yeah, and you got to work harder too, because it's like, say, like Paris and like Hugbunner and Mr. White and all these dudes are fucking geniuses. They're really good.
Yep.
And I'm okay. I'm like, I can code, but I have to work a little extra harder than everybody else to get what I need.
Yep.
So that's that too. It's just like, you have the work ethic. You got to be, they're knocking out code 6 hours. It'll take me 12. And you got to stay at it. So it's like, you can be creative too. Like when I was one of the big phishing things, and I talked about it last time, I think it got cut. But I was talking about phishing, that when you do phishing, you don't want it to be so good that you phish the police.
Yep.
Because that's the only person that's ever been caught fishing the cop. So you would put a little, some code in the source code saying, hey, don't deposit here for police, but make small imperfection. But I used phishing as an attack on a market. I used counterinsurgency tactic to build up one of the biggest phishing apparatuses that Darknet's ever seen.
Can you explain what do you mean by counterinsurgency tactics?
Okay, So pretty much I would have all my fishing stuff set up, but people would be having problems with this one market. And then I would set up, I'd have three different copies, right? Like an easy way. They just upload a template with instructions to start fishing this market, or give them like different type of instructions, medium, or they want to rent a server for me. So it's like this market was taking their money, or they felt they were cheated. I would give these people the template, like, hey, don't let them take your money, get their money out. Don't let them have all the fun stealing, steal from them too. And that the market admins hate that. Like Bohemia too, what was it? They were like, always like, he's inciting people to break rules. But I would give people, like, oh, you have a problem with them? Here's the phishing template. Go get your bread back. This is how you do it. And I just did it for thousands of people. And then I had my own shit up. And then I was using ID and homograph attacks to people who would swear. They'd be like, I copied darknet, dark.fail from this post on Dread. And then if you copy and you throw that, copy it into the browser, it would resolve this is before they cut it all off, but it would resolve a domain that wasn't dark.fail, but it would go to like something with a bunch of curlic, something changed, right? Like the A looks different.
Yep.
ID and homograph attack. If you need us, there's a tool called Evil URL on GitHub. And you can't use it anymore because they've done away that with like emoji type of domains. I think is the only way you can get away with it now. But it's still useful. That tool's still useful if you want to clone, like, say, an admin. And then you can use, just put admin, and it'll give you a bunch of different admin type of ways that you can, like, plug in to the, and then, like, just go around and impersonate them, right? If they don't have the special characters blocked off on their login, then you can go around and impersonate anybody.
Yep.
So I could show you a little bit of that when you get off, but yeah, I mean, I used to do a lot of shit.
I was kind of like using like, I've seen people use like hex in SQL injections when like they had a WAF that like would ban certain characters or certain sequences of characters. They would just like, they would switch it up and they would use hex to be able to bypass the WAF so they could still do SQLI and avoid the WAF. Like the WAF's looking for like very specific certain things. So when you would switch it up and change it, it would totally make it unrecognizable. Almost like if you were to do one attack where with a certain sequence of words, and maybe those words were blocked on a list. If you change it up and you use Chinese or Indonesian, that can go through without an issue. Is that like kind of the comparison that you're talking about?
Yeah. Mine is just like, sometimes these sites are built really well that can't just go hack right into them. So you got to have to, if you have problems with them, you have to figure out clever ways to just maybe not even, you don't got to shut down the whole machine. You just can bog them down where it makes it impossible. Like when I was doing the phishing, their support was so flooded with tickets that they had to do support on Dread because there was so many fucking phishing tickets that it just bogged them down. Now this market made money, but if it wasn't for that, they could have made way more. And they were a shitty market. And the only reason why they got number one is because they were at the right place, right time.
Yep.
But it was just a bunch of scumbag people. And I'm not going to get into that.
So how many markets do you think are actually like that, that are like a bunch of scumbags? Do you think it's the majority? Do you think it's a minority? Do you think it's like a 50-50 shot? Off the top of my head, I would say probably the two biggest markets right now would be like
Archetype and then Drug Hub. It's pretty much number two. It's already there.
What would you say about them? Like with as far as like their admins, anything about their admins? And if so,
I've known Yoshi for a long time, like Yoshi before he even started his market. I remember when he first came out, he hacked back Roma.
So
packed like, them up real good.
When you say like Yoshi, like who are you referring to?
The Archetype admin.
Okay.
I remember when he was building his market, I was working somewhere and came and did a check on it, pin tested it, and it came back good. But yeah, he's a good one though. And then I would say the drug hub guy too. He's the new guy, but I remember White. White was the genius.
When you say White, who are you referring to?
Mr. White.
Okay.
Mr. White from, he was the White House market.
Yep.
Admin. And then D-Snake too. D-Snake and Alpha 2. Alpha 2 was a real genius. I picked up a lot from him. A lot about if you're running market, you have to have something revolutionary in it to set you apart from everybody else. Otherwise, your market will never take off. So it's got to look good, and it has to have that something that sets you apart.
Yep.
And yeah, and then D-Snake too. He was a good person, I think. Very smart person. I think with the Alpha Bay 2 thing, I think since they came back because the Fed had a thing on Alpha 2, they're all sitting around laughing at him, like, you know, shoved on the floor and all that. I think Alpha.
Can you expand on that? What do you mean? Like, so, you know, we have people who don't know anything about darknet markets. Can you explain that some more?
Okay. So yeah, the Alpha 2 was the original Alpha Bay admin, and he got busted in Thailand, and they used the car to like ram his gate, get him to come out. So there's a video of the Fed sitting around looking at Alpha 2 in handcuffs in his shoes, and they're just ridiculing him and mocking him and stuff. So and then from D-Snake and the rest of it, I think D-Snake and the rest of the crew, all their money was all taken in the bust. Apparently a couple wallets were still to survive from what I heard from him. But I think getting on the thing with D-Snake, everybody gives him a tough time, but I just think he came back. He made the market back for his friend, and then just made all the money back for him and his team. And when they closed out, when it was time, everybody got paid and they closed it out. So I think that's what, I was never involved with that, but I just knew him.
Yep.
And yeah, I think that everybody gives him shit, but I think he was one of the smartest. Dude, I saw a post on I2P about D-Snake. He made that script to make I2P work on Tails.
Yeah, I've seen that script. Yep.
And then fucking one of the I2P maintainers or whatever was talking about how D-Snake fucked up I2P. And then I remember, because everybody would go on the I2P Reddit, try to get that, like, how do I get on I2P? And then that guy already burnt, curse and parrots and hug butter, get them to keep their darknet retards in line. Like, even it was that the guy ZZZ, even he's the maintainer, he's like, I will help the cops. I've been working at I2P for most of my adult life, and I will help the cops find you. I was just like, wow. Like, that whole, when they came back, it was just the whole thing.
Yep.
But yeah, everybody gives him a bad rap, but he wasn't that bad of a guy.
It's interesting because there's not a lot of takes like that out there about him.
If you knew him, he was chill. Smart guy. He used to tell me about, dude, he was really good with finance. He'd be like, bear shares are the way of the past. And he was like, I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And he'd be like, yeah, you could put your money in an offshore company and then get these shares called bearer shares. And if you own the shares, you can go anywhere, cash them in, and get your money out. He was like really advanced with all this crazy stuff. I was just like, wow, okay.
It's interesting how he's like, sounds like a Swiss Army knife where he's got a whole bunch of different specialties that he actually has that really help. Kind of like that goes back to the question I asked you during the mini interview of what things in your personality help you survive. Sounds like for him it was just that being really good at multiple, kind of having multiple specialities centered around making money or business or what helped him.
Dude, and then also too, when Alpha Bay 2 came back, they had the media eaten out of their hand, where Dread Admin's going to do shit to them, right? They had to push them up. I feel like if it wasn't for D-Snake, that maybe White House would have retired early. Because everybody saw the writing on the wall. And right when they came back, they had, everybody was eating right out of their out of his hand. And I know we were going to talk about Grubhub, but maybe we can push that back next week. I have a whole lot of that on that. I know we're trying to cap our thing to one hour.
Yeah, I think I think that's a good idea. I think what we'll do is I think let us know in the comments. Are you guys that have made it this far, please let us know in the comments or contact info if you're watching this if you're listening to this on a streaming service.
The Grubhub thing is going to take an hour because we got a bunch of good we got some stuff from Paris and from the admin themselves, and it'd be a disservice to just skim over it.
Yeah,
so we're gonna have to put that to the next.
Yeah, so let's on the next one, let's start it off. We'll start it off with people's comments from YouTube, and then we'll hop right into Grubhub for the next episode, if that works for you.
Yeah, perfect, man. I just know that we want to keep our time down.
Yeah, it takes a while to edit the longer ones. But yeah, definitely. I'll hop out first. Thank everyone for watching or listening this far. It's awesome having you guys be a part of this and give us feedback. I know I definitely enjoy myself in doing this podcast because it's kind of just a laid back, relaxed atmosphere. That's what we're going for. Anyway, so.
Something while you're driving or you're laying down the couch or you're just coding something and you not need that background noise, you throw us on.
Yeah, for sure. You can take us out, Roach.
Well, man, thank you everybody for listening and hit us up on the comments. You can also hit me up on Jabber. I put it on the contact page on the website. We're on Apple, Spotify, all major platforms. And just thanks for the support. And, this episode was a little different. I think we didn't plan it to go like this, but I think it's going to come out all right. Well, appreciate you guys, and thank you for listening.